The building where Mark Twain stayed is now a yeshiva. The building where Mark Twain stayed has an apartment that had been owned by a man who was prime minister of Israel. The city Twain visited is the capital of a Jewish country to which the Jews returned and where the land blooms. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 154, Mark Twain in the Holy Land. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. In 1867, a journalist named Samuel Clemens arrived in the Holy Land. He had come aboard a ship filled with Christian pilgrims. They had journeyed in order to connect with the land of the Bible. He had come to send dispatches back to his paper, and his cynical reports on the anticlimactic nature of the Holy Land, later published in book form as Innocents Abroad, made his reputation and launched the career of the man who would become known as Mark Twain. But in the midst of his cynicism, Twain missed a larger message, and his own dispatches allow us to look back and ponder the miraculous nature of the Holy Land and of Jerusalem. A theme throughout Twain's reports is that what was described as the land of milk and honey did not seem to him impressive at all. Twain reflected on the biblical phrase, from Dan to Beersheba, which was intended to capture the breadth of the land, and how, for him, that phrase seemed less impressive in the industrial age. He wrote, quote, Palestine is only from 40 to 60 miles wide. The state of Missouri could be split into three Palestines, and there would then be enough material left for part of another, possibly a whole one. From Baltimore to San Francisco is several thousand miles, but it will be only a 7 days journey in the cars when I am 2 or 3 years older. If I live, I shall necessarily have to go across the continent every now and then in those cars, but one journey from Dan to Beersheba will be sufficient, no doubt. It must be the most trying of the two. Therefore, if we chance to discover that from Dan to Beersheba seemed a mighty stretch of country to the Israelites, let us not be airy with them, but reflect that it was and is a mighty stretch when one cannot traverse it by rail. End quote. In the north of the Holy Land, known as the most fertile area of the land of Israel, Twain saw here and there very little evidence of agriculture, what he described as, quote, an acre or two of rich soil studded with last season's dead corn stalks, end quote. Because of the role that it played in Christian scripture, so many of the travelers sought to stand at the shores of the Sea of Galilee, yet Twain chose to contrast it to Lake Tahoe in America. As he wrote, at Tahoe, quote, it is solitude, for birds and squirrels on the shores and fishes in the water are all the creatures that are near to make it otherwise, but it is not the sort of solitude to make one dreary. Come to Galilee for that. If these unpeopled deserts, these rusty mounds of barrenness that never, never, never do shake the glare from their harsh outlines and fade into vague perspective, that melancholy ruin of Capernaum, this stupid village of Tiberias, slumbering under its 6 funereal plumes of palms, end quote. And he concludes his description that the Sea of Galilee is a, quote, solemn, sailless, tintless lake reposing within its rim of yellow hills and low, steep banks, end quote. Interestingly, in Twain's reflection on the Battle of Deborah in the north of Israel, Twain connected the barrenness of the land that he saw to the promise in the Bible that with the exile of the chosen people, barrenness would strike the land. He wrote, quote, somewhere in this part of the country, I do not know exactly where, Israel fought another bloody battle 100 years later. Deborah the prophetess told Barak to take 10,000 men and sally forth against another King Yabin who had been doing something, end quote. And then after describing Deborah's battle and what followed, Twain added, quote, stirring scenes like these occur in this valley no more. There is not a solitary village throughout its whole extent, not for 30 miles in either direction. There are 2 or 3 small clusters of Bedouin tents, but not a single permanent habitation. One may ride 10 miles hereabouts and not see 10 human beings. To this region, one of the prophecies is applied. I will bring the land into desolation, and your enemies which dwell therein shall be astonished at it. And I will scatter you among the heathen, and I will draw out a sword after you, and your land shall be desolate, and your cities waste. No man can stand here by deserted Ein Melacha and say the prophecy has not been fulfilled. And a bit later, Twain added, quote, I could see easily enough that if I wish to profit by this tour and come to a correct understanding of the matters of interest connected with it, I must studiously and faithfully unlearn a great many things I have somehow absorbed concerning Palestine. I must begin a system of reduction. Like my grapes which the spies bore out of the promised land, I have got everything in Palestine on too large a scale. Some of my ideas were wild enough. The word Palestine always brought to my mind a vague suggestion of a country as large as the United States." End quote. This, then, was Twain's experience in the Galilee, where he saw at least some sign of greenery here and there. But when it came to the most sacred site in the Holy Land, Twain reported that he saw nothing of the famed beauty described in the Bible. He further wrote, quote, "We pressed on toward the goal of our crusade, renowned Jerusalem. The further we went, the hotter the sun got, and the more rocky and bare, repulsive and dreary the landscape became. There could not have been more fragments of stone strewn broadcast over this part of the world if every 10 square feet of the land had been occupied by a separate and distinct stonecutter's establishment for an age. There was hardly a tree or a shrub anywhere. Even the olive and the cactus, those fast friends of a worthless soil, had almost deserted the country. No landscape exists that is more tiresome to the eye than that which bounds the approaches to Jerusalem." End quote. Thus did Innocents Abroad describe the desolation of the Holy Land. And Twain later in his book again referenced the possibility that the barrenness was linked to biblical decree. He wrote, quote, "Palestine sits in sackcloth and ashes. Over it broods the speak of a curse that has withered its fields and fettered its energies." And a bit later he wrote, quote, "Palestine is desolate and unlovely, and why should it be otherwise? Can the cure of the deity beautify a land? Palestine is no more of this workaday world. It is sacred to poetry and tradition. It is dreamland." End quote. So Twain wrote. But as Rav Moshe Tarragon of Yeshivat Haratzion and others have noted, the author of Innocents Abroad had a distinguished predecessor. As we have seen in this podcast, exactly 600 years before Nachmanides had come to Jerusalem and seen the land's barrenness, and as we have also discussed, he noticed what Twain noticed, that not only was there desolation in the land, but that the land grew more desolate as one approached Jerusalem. But for Nachmanides, there was a larger message there, that as he put it, the holier the land, the more desolate, because the land was waiting for the Jews. He, Nachmanides, created a synagogue because he believed that if the Jews returned to the land, then the land would return to the Jewish people. And here, interestingly, is what Twain did not notice. Jerusalem had become a city to which the Jews, despite all challenges from Jerusalem's many rulers, had indeed returned. As Abigail Green notes, Moses Montefiore had visited the city again in the 1860s and found it very different from the city that he had seen on his first visit. The Churva synagogue had risen with its enormous, glorious dome. The Jews were a majority of the city. Ashkenazim and Sfaradim both lived there, both prayed there. And thanks to Montefiore, there was even a Jewish neighborhood outside the walls, an expansion of Jerusalem. Twain was disappointed that he did not see the past, but Montefiore could sense the Jewish city and land that was to be. Fascinatingly, it was recently reported that the building where Twain stayed when he visited Jerusalem can now be identified. Nadav Shragai wrote the following, quote, "A group of researchers and archaeologists has recently located the Jerusalem building that housed the famed Mediterranean Hotel, which served in the late 19th century as the intelligentsia's cultural, social, and tourist hub in the Holy Land." End quote. It turns out that this building is now a yeshiva of Ateret Kohanim. But, as Shragai writes, quote, "In 1867, however, the structure saw a very different guest. The American humorist, satirist, lecturer, and writer Samuel Langhorne Clemens, better known by the pen name Mark Twain. Twain, who stayed in the Mediterranean during a trip to the land of Israel and Europe, wrote in the hotel at least one of the 50 letters that served as the basis for a book on his travels entitled The Innocents Abroad or The New Pilgrim's Progress. To this day, the book is considered the most widely read travel guide in the history of American literature." According to Shimon Gibson, a British-born archaeologist working in Jerusalem who headed the research team, even though Twain stayed in the Mediterranean for only 2 days, the discovery could have significant tourism value for American visitors to Israel. A few years after Twain's visit, the Mediterranean's Christian owners sold the building to Moshe Wittenberg, one of Jerusalem's most prominent philanthropists, after whom the building was named. Former Prime Minister Ariel Sharon also has a connection to the building. He purchased one of the apartments in it 20 years ago. Sharon eventually sold the apartment to the religious seminary. End quote. In other words, the building where Mark Twain stayed is now a yeshiva. The building where Mark Twain stayed has an apartment that had been owned by a man who was Prime Minister of Israel. The city Twain visited is the capital of a Jewish country to which the Jews returned and where the land blooms. It is a story so fantastical that Twain himself could not have come up with it. But this story really happened. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.